Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations make free time available to present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our program today, Court Without a Gavel, was written by Mark Siegel.
Oh, Miss Smith, would you bring in your notebook, please? The one with my brief to the governor.
Right away, Mr. Rowe.
Good.
I have it here, Mr. Rowe, as far as you've gone.
Oh, fine. Will you read it back to me, please?
Yes, sir. Here. Dear Mr. Governor, as a member of your Commission on Judicial Practices, I beg to submit the following findings relative to the expedition of judicial procedures and the securing of qualitatively better results in the courts of this state. The average delay in court calendar...
Words of my report to the governor are formal and the phrases are legalistic. But behind the neatly ordered paragraphs is the tumultuous human striving for a wiser system of justice among men. This is the story of one effort toward that end. The story of a unique court that meets on New York's Lower East Side to dispense a kind of justice first developed when the world was young. It is the kind of court we need to keep the world young. I think of it always as the court without a gavel. In the interest of discretion, I'll call myself Richard Rowe. That's not my name, of course, but I ask you to accept this legal fiction. A few months ago, I walked into the study of Rabbi Israel Goldstein, who serves as president of the Jewish Conciliation Board of America.
Delighted to meet you, Mr. Rowe.
Thank you, Rabbi.
I've been wondering since you called...
Why I want to see you.
Exactly.
As part of our survey, Rabbi, the governor has asked me to look into the less official courts, too. The conciliation efforts made by the major faith, for example.
We'll be glad to be of any help we can, Mr. Rowe.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Goldstein. Now,
Jewish Conciliation Board of America.
Yes, thank you. This Jewish Conciliation Board, how many cases a year does it process?
Well, Mr. Rowe...
Yes, Rabbi?
We don't quite think of the people who come before us as cases, and the word process doesn't exactly...
Of course, I'm sorry. I understand what you're getting at. Well, as we say in the courts, I'll rephrase the question.
Not really necessary, Mr. Rowe. I was trying only to indicate an attitude.
Of course.
I'd say we hear about 1,000 people a year.
1,000? Well, that's a tremendous number.
Well, the number isn't so important.
Well, not important, Rabbi. The courts are so crowded now that we can't...
Don't misunderstand me, sir. The board recognizes that it helps to relieve congestion in the courts. But we think of this work as serving a purpose far beyond speeding justice.
Well, now, Dr. Goldstein, don't write off the question of speed so lightly. My commission would be very happy indeed if speed were its sole achievement.
Oh, I agree that speed must be striven for, Mr. Rowe, but... If I may make an observation...
No, by all means, Dr. Goldstein.
The quality of justice is as important as the speed with which it is administered.
Now that the commission's work is complete, I'll admit that my call to Dr. Goldstein was one which I had considered, to that point, routine. A very small part of the entire complicated picture... Yet I soon found myself considering with him the very heart of the problem.
You see, in our view, the highest justice goes beyond the law.
Beyond the law?
Well, it reaches beyond the letter of the law. It reaches to love of man fellow man.
Well, Rabbi, this is very interesting, theoretically, and I subscribe to your ideal viewpoint.
But
But what practical application is this to the problem at hand?
A very practical application. It's the principle on which our hearings are held.
That men should love each other?
Yes. That the highest justice is such that the disputants leave the courtroom hand in hand.
The loser and the winner?
Oh, we hope there are no losers and no winners in our hearings.
But how can that be?
Our whole effort, Mr. Rowe, is to persuade those who come before us to come to an agreement. An agreement which both can accept as just.
Uh-huh. To persuade rather than to judge.
Exactly.
Well, that's a very enlightened principle, Dr. Goldstein. Tell me, how long has your court operated on it?
Our board?
Yes.
Since the beginning, 30 years ago.
Well, that's remarkable. Now, the idea of conciliation in the courts is hardly that old.
Mr. Rowe, the idea of conciliation is some 2,000 years old.
Oh?
You'll find it expressed in detail in the Talmud.
The highest justice goes beyond the law. That's a curious idea for a lawyer. On a rainy Wednesday afternoon in April, I traveled down to New York's Lower East Side. I wanted to see this court in action. I call it a court, perhaps from habit, or perhaps only because I cannot think of any word that really grasps the feeling of this unique institution. The litigants were... No, I'm sorry. I should say the people involved seem to be of every age and every economic level.
Please take your seats. We're going to begin in a minute.
Mr. Louis Richmond, the executive director of the Jewish Conciliation Board, was asking for quiet. Asking, mind you, not ordering.
Please answer if your name is called. Mr. Milton Greenberg and Mr. Samuel Marcus.
Here.
Mrs. Dorothy Block and Miss Ann Block.
We're here.
Mr. Abram Weintraub and Mrs. Abram Weintraub.
There was something strange about it to a lawyer's ear.
Mr. Alvin.
Suddenly I realized that the names were being called without a familiar little word that I've lived with all of my professional life. In this strange court, a case was called as Mr. So-and-so and Mr. So-and-so. The word versus, which means against, of course. The word versus was nowhere to be heard.
Shall I go on reading, Mr. Ross?
Yes, please, Miss Smith.
The judges are chosen from a panel of several hundred distinguished citizens of this city. They serve without compensation in groups of three. A lawyer, a rabbi, and a businessman in each group. Established originally as a free court of...
After the calendar had been called, the judges filed in and took their places behind a small table.
Mr. Milton Greenberg and Mr. Samuel Marcus, please come forward.
The two principals came forward. And the questioning began.
Now, Mr. Greenberg, suppose you begin by stating your complaint. The rabbi here, Mr. Sobel, and I will listen to your side of the story first.
Yes, sir. About 4 years ago, Mr. Marcus and
I... As the hearing started, Dr. Goldstein slipped into a seat beside me.
Good afternoon, Mr. Rowe. Glad you could make it.
Well, I am too, Dr. Goldstein.
Well, how do you react to what you see so far?
Well, it's a little unusual.
Yes, no judicial robes, no lawyers. Must be an odd sight for an attorney.
Ah, yes. But there are courts where the judges don't wear gowns. I've seen that.
Of course.
But on the other hand, Dr. Goldstein...
Yes, Mr. Rowe?
In more than 25 years as a lawyer, I've never before seen a court without a gavel. I can't go into detail in the many cases I watched that afternoon, but there are two situations that remain in my mind, where in their disposition I recognize that certain principles, only dimly understood in formal courts of law, were being used to bring about that higher justice which goes beyond the law. The first involved an elderly couple. They faced the panel of judges, somewhat self-consciously, but without fear.
Then, as I understand it, Mrs. Weintraub, you and your husband have been married for 50 years.
52 years, next September, Your Honor.
52 years. And after 51 years, you left your husband's house?
I left. And I'm glad I left it.
But you're not asking him for support.
Thank God I don't need his support. My children will help me. If I had to depend on him, Judge, he's the stingiest man
I ever saw. Your Honor.
It's true, Abe. You know it's true.
I object.
Just a minute, Mr. Weintraub.
I don't think she should be allowed to call me stingy. I object.
Mr. Weintraub, calm down. You'll have your chance to tell your side later. And please, please don't say I object again while your wife is talking.
You overrule my objection?
Please, Mr. Weintraub. You've been seeing too many movies. Now, let's hear what your wife has to say.
I don't want his money, Judge. I just want to live my own life. Alone.
I see.
May I ask a few questions, Judge?
Of course, will I.
Mrs. Weintraub, you've told this board that you and your husband have 7 children and 13 grandchildren.
That's right, Rabbi.
With a fine family like that, after a marriage of 51 years, you want to leave your husband?
She has left him, Rabbi. He's brought her here for us to tell her to go back to him.
Oh, I see. Mrs. Weintraub, can you tell us why you remained with your husband all these years? Why you didn't leave him before?
Why didn't I leave him before? I was too busy.
Will the people waiting to be heard please try to be quiet?
Too busy?
Yes, Rabbi, too busy. First the children came, then bar mitzvahs, engagements, weddings. There were troubles, too.
Yes, I'm sure there were troubles, Mrs. Weintraub. And now you're no longer busy.
Thank God my children are settled. For the first time, I'm free of responsibilities. I want to live by myself. Independently.
And you feel that you can't do that with your husband? The man you've shared 50 years of your life with?
Rabbi, listen to me. For 40 years, we lived in a little 3-room apartment. Every night, 6 o'clock, supper on the table. The same supper, whatever cost the least. He has a good business. Not a millionaire, but a good business. Did we ever go away for a vacation? Did we ever enjoy life? No. We saved for a rainy day. Believe me, the rainy day is here. I'm not going back to live with him.
Mr. Weintraub, I'm the businessman on this panel.
Yes, sir.
What kind of living have you made? I mean, all these years.
A good living. Enough to live on. Enough to raise 7 children.
I'm not saying he was bad to the children.
We understand that, Mrs. Weintraub. Now let's get to the point.
Yes, sir.
You brought your wife here before this board, and she's come here. Now, what do you want us to do?
Well, I want you to tell her to come back to me.
Mr. Weintraub, do you know that if this were a court of law, you wouldn't be able to bring your wife into court?
But I don't understand, Judge.
A husband can't make his wife return to him by law. For that matter, we can't make her return to you either. Not unless she wants to.
Well, Rabbi, you talk to her. Maybe she'll listen to you. I can't sleep. I can't eat. I have no reason for living.
Just a minute, Mr. Weintraub, just a minute.
Don't you understand? I love my wife. You hear me, Jenny? I'll say it again. I love my wife.
The first time he said that in years, Rabbi.
Do you believe that he means it, Mrs. Weintraub?
I want to believe. But deeds speak louder than words. Why did he deny us everything? Why?
Well, maybe I wasn't so free with the money. Maybe I was worried about the children. I wasn't keeping anything for myself. What I was saving was for my family.
You were saving, Mr. Weintraub. All the time, your wife was stretching every penny to make both ends meet.
Yes, sir. For sickness, for old age.
Now, didn't you realize how difficult you were making your wife's life?
But I did without things, too.
That doesn't change the situation. Where were you saving?
In the bank.
Do you have the bank book with you?
Well, sure. Here, I have it with me. Here.
This account, Mr. Weintraub.
Yes?
It's in your wife's name.
In my name? The account In my name?
Well, of course it's in your name. For who else was I saving the money?
You never told me that. He never told me, Judge. Abe, you foolish man. Why didn't you tell me when I could still listen?
Mrs. Weintraub, you heard before. Your husband can't make you go back to live with him. That is not by law.
Yes, Rabbi.
But I want to ask your husband some questions in front of you. After he's answered them, I want you to consider what you should do.
All right, Rabbi. I'll consider them. I didn't know he was saving for me.
Yes, we know that you didn't know. Now, Mr. Weintraub, if your wife agrees to come back to you for a trial period, will you try to give her a chance to enjoy life, to live a little more for herself than for others?
I will, Rabbi. I promise that. She can have the whole bank account. It's yours, Jenny. It was always yours.
If I come back, Abe, it's not for the money.
Mr. Weintraub, understand this. We can't give your wife back to you. You have to win her back.
I'll try, Rabbi. It's not so easy for a man of my age to change, but I'll try.
Well, Mrs. Weintraub, you've heard your husband.
Yes. I've heard him.
I think you deserve a little peace and harmony in your old age. What do you say?
What do I say? Abe, get your hat and coat. Let's go home.
There was not even a formal decision by the judges in the court without a gavel on that afternoon. And yet in half an hour, a decision had been reached by common consent that would reshape the remaining years of their lives for the people involved. That's the quality that I remember. That out of conflict came harmony. That out of that courtroom, new relationships between people were established. New relationships based on the oldest patterns of man's wisdom. The second case I remember well was one in which Mr. Biederman was asking to be reinstated to membership in a benevolent society from which he'd had been dropped.
They have no right to do it, Judge. No right at all.
Now, Mr. Biederman, please don't draw conclusions for the judges. Let's just stick to the facts.
I'm perfectly willing to stick to the facts. Now, the fact of the matter
is... just a minute, Mr. Biederman. Who is here representing the society?
I am, sir. Mr. Rosen.
What is your capacity in the society?
I'm the president.
And Mr. Biederman?
I'm the vice president, Judge.
You mean you were the vice president?
I am the vice president.
Gentlemen, please, let's conduct this hearing in an orderly fashion.
Well, that's why we came here, Judge, so we could...
Judge, I resent the insinuation
Mr.
that...
Mr. Biederman, the last thing we want in this hearing is resentment.
Yes, Rabbi.
Now, let's try to approach this problem without bitterness.
Yes, Rabbi.
Now, Mr. Biederman...
Yes, Judge.
According to these notes, you've been suspended from the society after 20 years of membership. Is that correct?
That is correct. For no reason...
Mr. Biederman, we already understand that you feel your suspension is unjust.
It's not only unjust, but it was...
hold on for a minute, and let's hear from the president of your society.
What do you want to know, Judge?
Why have you suspended, Mr. Biederman?
For misappropriation of funds, Judge.
So help me,
Mr.
I never...
Mr. Biederman...
But he can't say that
Biederman,
I...
Mr. Biederman, you know we're here to listen to this dispute impartially, don't you?
I'm sorry, Judge. I didn't mean to, but...
That's all right. Now, let's proceed. And, Mr. Rosen, this is a very serious charge. To accuse a man who has been active in your organization for 20 years of dishonesty.
Dishonesty? You think we're accusing Biederman of dishonesty?
Well, you said he misappropriated funds, didn't you?
Well, I'll explain that in a minute, Judge. But let's get one thing straight right away. I know Biederman for 35 years. No one is going to say that Biederman is dishonest. Not while I'm around to hear it.
Mr. Mr. Rosen, let's get to the bottom of this question of misappropriating funds.
Yes, Rabbi.
Just what did Mr. Biederman do?
Well, nothing so terrible, Rabbi. It's the way that he did it that we object to.
Well, can't you be a little more specific than that?
Well, certainly. Now, our society was organized to help the needy on the Lower East Side. Every year, we contribute a certain amount of money for that purpose, to help the needy on the Lower East Side.
Yes, and we understand that Mr. Biederman is in charge of distributing those funds.
Yes, Rabbi. So, this year, Mr. Biederman gave our money to a fund which helps the needy throughout the city.
Well, is that so terrible? Is that a reason
for... Well, we don't object to the contribution, Rabbi. It's that he did it without consulting us.
And you consider this a misappropriation of funds?
It's not the funds, Rabbi. He gave the money to a perfectly worthy cause. It's a misappropriation of authority. So we suspended him.
Mr. Biederman.
Yes, Judge.
This constitution of your society, it says that the purpose of the society shall be to help the needy on the Lower East Side. Has this constitution ever been changed?
The constitution hasn't changed, Judge, but conditions have changed.
We know that conditions have changed, Mr. Biederman, but a constitution is a constitution. A society can't run except by its own rules.
Now, look, Judge, my father founded this society. I know what his intentions were.
Whatever those intentions, Mr. Biederman, this is the constitution of your organization.
Mr. Biederman.
Yes, Rabbi.
It seems to me that you acted in perfectly good faith.
Thank you, Rabbi.
But you would have done better to try to get your organization to amend its constitution first. That's the democratic way to do these things.
Now, Rabbi, you've just put your finger on it.
On what, Mr. Rosen?
On the whole situation. You think we suspended Biederman for this alone? Of course not. It's not just this incident.
I didn't think it could be. Organizations don't usually suspend members on as small a technicality as this one.
For the last few years, Rabbi, he's been doing whatever he wants to. He doesn't ask the membership. He holds a meeting with himself, passes a resolution, then he acts on it.
Rabbi, if the membership had been more active, maybe I would have been less active.
I think I understand, Mr. Biederman.
Thank you, Rabbi.
But I also understand your organization's position. Activity is no excuse for being undemocratic.
Rabbi, was it democratic when they suspended me?
It may have been unwise, Mr. Biederman, but apparently it was democratic.
Without a hearing?
They suspended you without a hearing?
At a meeting I wasn't even invited to.
Yeah, well, we knew that if we invited him, Rabbi, we wouldn't even get a chance to discuss it.
Gentlemen, don't you see what's happened?
I see that I'm suspended after 20 years, undemocratically.
Mr. Biederman. Now, Mr. Beaton, when a man inflicts a hurt upon others, he really strikes it himself. We're all part of one another. The society acted unfairly, in my opinion, in suspending you without a hearing. But would they have acted that way if you had consulted them on other matters?
Maybe not, Rabbi. Maybe you're right. But the Constitution was wrong.
Now, Mr. Rosen, do you think that your membership will agree that your constitution should be amended?
Yes, I think so, Rabbi.
I think the judges will agree with me then, Mr. Rosen, that two wrongs don't make a right. Mr. Biederman deserves at least the right to be heard by your membership.
Agreed. If he'll just follow the rules.
Will you, Mr. Biederman?
Will I? Of course I will. You think I want to be suspended again?
In the pursuit of justice, this court without a gavel, this court which serves as lawyer to both parties, points a way forward towards an age-old goal. A standard of justice which includes that measure of mercy and goodwill which makes justice complete for all. Now, most of this I can't place in my formal report to the governor. And yet there's much to be learned from the court without a gavel on New York's Lower East Side. I'm a lawyer, not a scholar, but I know my Bible well enough to remember the prophetic injunction. Justice, justice shalt thou pursue.
you'd like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. Now we take great pleasure in presenting the Honorable William O. Douglas, Associate Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States. Justice Douglas.
The thing that has interested me particularly about the work of the Jewish Conciliation Board is that the board has been more interested in justice than in law. Law and justice are not necessarily the same. Throughout the centuries, law has been trying to catch up with justice. It has not always succeeded. That is one of the great eternal struggles of man. The search around the world by people of all races and creeds is basically the search for justice. One finds it cropping up in many different ways, both little ways and big ways, as one travels around the world. One of the most important struggles going on inside America today is a struggle to keep America the symbol of tolerance and fraternity. That is America's greatest strength in the long run. That is the power of America, not only at home but in the councils of nations. We must, in our community activities and national activities, promote ideals of tolerance. We must keep those ideals of America alive in the hearts of the people. Otherwise, we will lose our position of moral authority in the world. This problem, like all problems, starts at home and in our own neighborhood. And that is why the work of the Jewish Conciliation Board is so important. The work of the board, seeking to find what is the truth, trying to apply justice, is a great experiment in a busy community where there are many problems, local and international. It is important to take time out to make adjustments in the little problems of people. That, in the end, marks the differences between a society which administers to the needs of people and a society where sores and troubles fester, where the needs and aspirations of the ordinary man are neglected.
Thank you, Justice Douglas. Our eternal light drama today, Court Without a Gavel, was written by Mark Siegel. Cantor David Putterman sang the liturgical introduction. Featured in the cast were Paul McGrath as Mr. Rowe, Roger DeCoven as Dr. Goldstein, Bryna Rayburn as Mrs. Weintraub, Norman Rose as the rabbi, and Louis Sorin as Mr. Weintraub. This has been an NBC Radio Network production under the direction of Ed King. This is the NBC Radio Network.